Hey everyone, I'm Tari.
Hello everyone, I am Greg.
And this is CSI Talk. Hey everyone, welcome back. Another week, another episode of CSI Talk. Hi. Before we get into today's episode, we just want to let you all know that this is a safe space for you. This is always going to be a safe space, regardless of what is happening in the world right now. Whenever you want to come here just to chill out, listen to two girls talking about their favorite science crime fighting show, we got you. We're girls.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we don't have any news regarding season 3. But we do have some updates to tell you about our podcast, though. We are going to be covering another spinoff of the CSI franchise. And we actually spent a lot of time deciding which spinoff we should cover. And we have decided that we're going to cover CSI New York. So if you like CSI New York, I mean, we've mentioned CSI New York a couple of times in the past. And
I think we mentioned the CSIs.
I think we've mentioned all the CSI, but I do remember mentioning CSI New York a lot of times, though. I do know CSI Miami is huge in South America, but especially because they started a few episodes here, but we decided to cover CSI New York. We're going to cover a few episodes from CSI New York, and we might cover some relationships, some characters, you know.
Especially the key relationships, especially the one that the characters that got married in the show.
Yeah, some characters, they got married and then he cheated on her. He cheated on her, on his wife that he had a kid with.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember, like, he married her and they got a kid.
Because I don't remember Danny ever cheating on her.
They cheated on her.
I don't remember that. I remember the stalker. I remember that the person he tried to kill them both.
Yeah, they had a stalker, but there's a storyline that they were together, but I'm not sure if they had a kid at that point, but they were together or they were in the early stages of their marriage. And there was like this case and this woman lost her kid on this case that Danny was working. And he felt guilty because he thought it was his responsibility. And then like the he cheated on her, and he cheated on his wife. I don't know if it
they weren't married.
You don't remember? Okay, but still, he cheated on her.
Yeah, still wrong. Because in midway through season 4, Danny's neighbor's son, Ruben's son was accidentally killed in a course of a banking robbery, blaming himself for Ruben's death. Danny begins to push Lindsay away in grief and begins to have an affair with Ruben's mother, Ricky. So he thought he should have saved the son, but it was impossible for him. The guilt resulted in making poor decisions.
Well, yeah, so we're going to be covering CSI New York, but the first episode we're going to be covering is going to be in September. But we're still going to be covering a lot of CSI crime scene investigation and obviously CSI Vegas when season 3 returns. And as soon as we get more news about season 3, we're going to share with you guys. Yeah, there isn't a lot going on right now. I mean, they're still protesting. They haven't, yeah, they're still protesting. I'm sure you guys see.
Let's get started on Grave Danger Part 2.
Yeah, Grave Danger Part 2.
Happy 100th episode. Happy 100th.
Happy 100th episode. We should have said that before we started recording. Jesus, I forgot. Happy 100th episode, Bree.
Happy 100th, Kari.
It's our 100th episode. Here's to 100 more or 200, 300.
1,000 more. Here's to 1,000 more.
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely love this. I should definitely bring some BuzzFeed Unsolved reference for this particular episode. I always bring it, but I should. I should definitely bring it for this episode because it's our 100th. Nothing better to celebrate our 100th episode than Grave Danger Part 2. And what an episode. Well, according to Anthony Zucker in the Polyfest that they did with CSI Vegas season one. When this episode was brought up, he said that CSI Crime Scene Investigation was the leader of audience with this particular episode. And it's a great episode. So to this day, one of the greatest episodes of CSI, but still, it's a very hot episode to watch.
And this episode exhausted the actors.
Yeah. I mean, because they shot it back to back. Part one, yeah. Part two. Oh, okay. If you're wondering why we're still covering this type of shows, even though the strike is going on, according to SAG-AFTRA regulations, podcasts and YouTubers, you know, they can still cover movies and TV shows.
As long as it's not something that's currently under SAG. And CSI, basically the first 15 seasons, plus the movie, and CSI New York happened a long time.
It happened a long time ago, so we can still cover the show without any consequences. So the official synopsis of Brave Danger Part 2 is, after Grissom gives the kidnapper the ransom money, the kidnapper blows himself up without revealing where Nick is buried. The team must then use all their knowledge and resources, as well as race time, to find Nick before he runs out of air. I'm sure we've all heard, especially in CSI, the first 48 hours to cases are the most important ones. But now they are really racing against time here because Nick is going to run out of air and their job titles is crime scene investigator, right? So it means that they could be looking for his body, not to recover him, right? Everybody's on the case. And everybody shows up when Grissom is. And Grissom is trying to put himself together while the poor EMT is just trying to assess him, check if he's in pain and all of that. And Grissom's like, he just blew himself up. Yeah, he did.
And his ears are really kind of like mine are clogged right now. I'm trying to hold him laughter so hard.
Yeah. Bresson calls in the tags on the Ward expedition. They're hunters, right? The car that they find is the car that Ward previously had seen on the CCTV is actually the car that they were looking for. Greg and Ward, they are going through the car and they find out that the last trip was 23 miles away. They already know that the car was heading east. Apparently cars have a black box. So that's how they know. Yeah, cars have black box if you don't know and you can tell how many miles or if you live anywhere else that is not the United States, kilometers, you can tell how many kilometers the car has run or miles the car has run since the last time the car was turned on, or how many miles or kilometers the car has been, quote unquote, since it has started. Catherine, she's like, I really went through all that trouble to get $1 million just for the guy to blow himself up. So she tells all the cadets to gather the money up and tell them to do no funny stuff, which means she tells them to not steal any of the money because she knows somebody might be willing to steal some of the evidence. And poor Dave, he can get an idea from the guy that blew himself up. From what I could tell, if you watch the episode, he's going through the guy's torso, but there's no ID, so he couldn't get any possible identification to who he was and what was his motive and all of that. Sarah, she is looking at the ground, looking for any thumb, any finger that she could look for, and she finds a thumb. Apparently, the thumb was the only part of the hand of the guy that survived. Back at the lab, Archie is still trying to keep tabs on Nick through the live video. Just some reminder, this is before live stream happened. So he's just trying to keep the live feed alive. He lives for a moment in the feed ends. Apparently worked. He is at the lab. He's not back in the scene processing the explosion. He presses the watch button again. That's how we find out that the light and the fan were connected. Nick tells us that himself. We spend a lot of time with Nick on this episode, though, and it gives us, I mean, at least it gave me that sensation of claustrophobia. And that thing, it really frustrates Nick. He's really mad at the fact that the fan starts, it stops working when the light is on. We go to Sarah and she's processing the sound that she recovered from the scene and she runs the print through the system, but she doesn't get any matches. And Warwick activates the video again and he turns on the light again and stops the fan again. Nick is really pissed at this point, so he gets the gun. And I was talking to Bree yesterday. Warwick thinks that Nick is about to
shoot himself.
Yeah, Nick is about to shoot himself, and he goes through the five stages of grief within 5 minutes, really quickly. But actually, Nick shoots the light, but the feed doesn't end. Actually, it keeps going, and the fan activates itself. But the thing is, by shooting the light, he made a hole on the coffin. And by making a hole in the coffin, he made a very bad mistake. RTT tells Grissom Nick must have figured out that the light and the fan were running from the same battery, but he was still not able to trace the webcam. Yeah, he wasn't able to trace the webcam. And every time they pressed the watch button, a different ISP, which is a different electronic address, is generated, but he thinks he's getting closer. Mia, who also happens to be on Criminal Mind, not the same character, she tells Sarah that she ran the print through CODIS, and she found that there were 7 alleles in common with a Kelly Gordon, and based on the age difference, I don't know how you can get the age from a thumb, but they get the age from a thumb. Probably the DNA, right? She believes that Callie is the kidnapper's daughter, which means that her father is Walter's guardian. And Callie is brought in to questioning. Before that, Grissom and Sarah, they go through the case files. And we're told that Kelly is in prison serving DS3 of a 5-year sentence for accessory to murder. Sarah, she looks at the map from the crime scene and she realizes that the address that the murder took place is the same address from where the package from which the tape came from is the same address. The tape that came from in the previous episode to let them know that Nick was actually kidnapped, indeed, came from that address. Grissom, he finds out that it was actually a styrofoam cup with Callie's DNA that put her behind bars. That was the meaning of the styrofoam cup that they found on Nick's crime scene. Callie, she is brought into questioning Bress and Sarah, and she obviously hates that. And Sarah asks her if Callie had any idea that her father was planning a kidnapping against the CSI. And Callie said that she had no idea what her father was up to. Bress said that his father kidnapped the CSI and tried to blow up some cops. And she actually doesn't care. I mean, what were they expecting, really? Were they expecting her to care? That she was put behind bars by a cop that she ditched while she was escaping a murder scene? What were they expecting her to do? And Callie tells them that before she was incarcerated, she was studying horticulture, which is basically like plant science, flowers and stuff. And before she was in prison, And she tells them that there is a flower tattoo on her palm, on her left palm, that her cellmate gave her as, quote unquote, a gift. She also tells Sarah that she hopes Nick dies. Were they really expecting her to cooperate? Catherine, Greg, and Warwick, they are still processing the explosion site. And Greg is going through the debris and he finds some wires. And he's like, what if we can find all the components and we can piece it all together and learn where they came from and track it? And Warwick literally explodes. He explodes. His survival's guilt is just over the top right now. He tells Catherine that it was supposed to be him on that box, not Nick. And Catherine physically tells him that that was not a luck thing, that it was not a bad luck thing. It was not supposed to be any of them on that box. And they were going to find Nick. And Greg actually, he found something. So he poured some liquid on the doors and he realized that there was something underneath. So they decided to start to dig. I hate this, okay? I hate this sequence, okay? Because what happens next is that they give us false hope. You know, we're thinking that they're finding Nick. They're going to find the box where Nick is buried. But
it's the classic misdirection scenario.
Yeah. We are actually led to believe that they are finding Nick.
I think I remember my first time watching this episode sitting at the end of the bunk, but obviously I had all that time in seeing it happening. Because it was a rerun, of course, on a channel that no longer exists. Spike TV. Call out to anybody who remembers that channel in the States. How do you feel that's been gone for over 10 years?
Well, when I first watched this episode, I was really disappointed because I really thought they were going to find him. And it's really hard because Nick is like singing the song about Christmas in Las Vegas. And I think he, at this point, he was probably hallucinating about being found.
And hallucinating.
Yeah.
But he'd been pleased to be found dead and nobody being sad about it, everybody being happy about it.
Yeah. And
well, that happens in a little bit.
Yeah. They don't find Nick. Actually, they find a prototype. With it, a dog inside. Actually reminded me of how the Russians sent a dog to space to see if a human could survive. Yeah, it's been, well, yeah, when the Russians sent a dog to space with no plans of bringing it back. And that dog is with the coffin, is brought back to the lab and is processed by Warwick. So he is reassembling the mechanism and he's able to do that. Usually Nick would be the one to do that, not him. Grissom, Sarah, and Archie, they are still watching the video feed. And Nick is recording a goodbye message into the tape. And Grissom is able to understand that because he read lips. And Nick tells Grissom that he's sorry because he let him down. Grissom said that he never let him down.
And so everybody knows, as somebody who studied a lot of a so-called deaf culture, lip reading is not an exact science.
Yeah, so for the context of the episode, we can assume that Nick apologized to Grissom and told him that he was sorry that he let him down. And Grissom said, "You never did." Well, Nick then looks at his feet and he begins to squirm around. Sarah thinks that he is losing it and he is convulsing. And Grissom, he enhances the video and he realizes that actually ants entered the coffin and he's starting to eat Nick alive. He literally says he's being eaten alive. But Nick, he puts a latex glove that he have put on his pockets. I mean, CSI, right? You gotta at least have a pair of latex gloves on your pocket to analyze stuff. And he tears it in half and put it on inside his nose to prevent the ants to get inside his, well, literally inside his body. And then he stops moving because it makes sense. If there is any insect around you, if you stop moving, the bugs or the insects, they won't bother you or they won't bite you as much. Catherine, Greg, Wark, and Hodges, they are examining the dog's coffins and they realize that it was a prototype to see how long somebody can survive. And Wark realizes that Nick only has about like 90 minutes of air left. And as if they didn't have enough on their plate already, now they only have 1.5 hours to save Nick. And Grissom is still watching the video and talking to himself. And Sarah's like, what are you doing?
Yep.
But he is actually talking to the ants. And when an ant crawls over the lenses of the camera, he is able to snap a photo of the ants to see exactly what is the type of ant he's dealing with. He is able to identify the species and he realizes that it's actually a fire ant. And it's a very rare ant in Las Vegas because they don't like this one. Grissom, he tells everyone that fire ants are only found in plants or tree nurseries. And there are 11 nurseries in the area, but they were able to narrow down to 2 because of the trace the RT did. I mean, this trace really took forever. Not to compare or anything, but I feel like Penelope from Criminal Minds will be able to trace this thing in a few hours. But I feel like she should be able to do her thing and be able to figure it out. Well, and it was the 23-mile travel that they've radius that they found on the car. And Sarah said that Callie, Walter's daughter, she worked with Flint. And she went to Grissom's desk to get the case filed. And then she returns. And she is the one that found out where Nick was buried. No one else was, because she was actually the one with Brass in the room when Callie said that she worked with Flint. Literally, there was a parade of cars, of police cars, running to the nurseries. And the owner tells Grissom about the fire ant mound, which is kind of like a little island. And Grissom tells everyone to fan out and look for loose soil, which is like a moved soil where Nick would be buried. Grass is like, well, literally the entire thing. I mean, couldn't be more vague about it. Catherine, she walks down to one of the paths and there's an electric emitter picking up the webcam signal. And the signal is growing stronger and she calls out to everyone that she's picking up on the transmitter. And when everyone arrives, she almost trips over and she realizes that there is something below the dirt, which means she trips over a vent pipe, which was the thing connected to the fan. She tells Nick through the pipe that they are coming to get him. But he is not listening because he is getting eaten by fire ants. And he is now hallucinating for good because his heart starts to be faster and he hallucinates with his own autopsy with Doc Robbins and Dave doing his autopsy. He is literally hallucinating about his organs getting removed.
And I'm talking about it.
Literally, his father is also in his hallucination. Dude. The amount of therapy this boy would need after this. So Nick is awakened again from the pain of the fire ant bites. And Warwick and the other officers starts to dig. Obviously, Grissom would never be caught doing the hard work. Grissom would never be caught dead doing the hard work. Warwick watches 8 bips, which means that they ran out of time. Inside the coffin, the fan stops. So the battery has run out. And Nick starts to scream. And he gets the gun because he wants to end it. Ends everything. And he's about to pull the trigger when the light shines in the coffin. and work, brush away the doors. And he's like, what are you doing? Drop that. We found you. And Greg runs to the car to get the sign.
Extinguisher.
Extinguisher. Why didn't they have that on hand?
Because they were panicked. You forget things when you're panicked.
You're okay, but Nick was being eaten alive by fire. They would need something to relieve the pain in a way. So Grissom tells him that it had to be short bursts. Otherwise, it would
kill him.
Yeah. And the ants die. They're dead. And they're about to get Nick out when Catherine gets a call from Hodges. Hodges was back in the lab and is still analyzing the coffin, and he calls Catherine to tell her that underneath the coffin, there was actually C4, if I'm not mistaken, which means that if they had pulled Nick out, they will all die. It will cause an explosion, they will all die. And she tells everyone to back away because there are explosions, and Ward tells everyone that he's not leaving Nick's side, and Grissom tells him that he's got a plan and tells Ward to go away, and Nick starts to panic again because he thinks he's being left out. And Grissom jumps in the hole, and he only gets his attention by calling him by his nickname, Poncho.
His family, no less.
Yeah. He tells Nick that there are explosives underneath the coffin, and if they get Nick out, everyone would die, and they needed to equalize his weight to get him out, but they were not going to leave him. And then he makes Nick promise, and Nick just shakes his head, and he's like, yeah, I promise. But then Grissom is like, I need you to say I promise. And he says pretty weakly, I promise. It would be a lot easier if you just, put a stake through my heart than to make me watch that. So they open the coffin lid, and that hook is tied to Nick's belt. And he tells him to close his eyes and hold his breath. And the dirt is poured into the coffin. And everyone, literally all the team, even Eckley, push the rope that was attached to the hook.
You gotta say, during this time when things got serious, Eckley wasn't part of the team. He may have been not a great person at the time, but when it came down to it, he was there for them.
Yeah, when it came down to it, he was there for them. He was not a team player, not even the least.
He did not understand how to be part of a team.
But it was, everyone was in it, so everyone pulled him out. And even Grissom we joke about how he has a bad knee. Although CSI Vegas did prove us wrong, he doesn't have a bad knee, everybody. He doesn't have a bad knee. I think it's episode 8? I think? Pipe Cleaner. I don't know the number of the episode, but I think it's episode 8 or 9. He doesn't have a bad knee, everyone. Okay, so everyone that jokes about Grissom having a bad knee, he doesn't have a bad knee. I know there's a fanfic out there that really goes on this trope that Grissom has bad knees. He doesn't have bad knees, okay? And so they pull him off. They pull Nick off the dirt. And oh, what a heartbreaking scene, because my boy had been eaten alive, stayed in the coffin for almost 2 days, and he is now full of dirt. Well, he is now being taken to the hospital. Catherine and Warwick are with him in the ambulance. Everyone is watching him leave, and Grissom tells Eckley that he wants his team back. And there's nothing Eckley can do at this point, okay? Grissom asked. They act effectively. They proved with this case that they can work together really good as a team. So there's nothing that Eckley can say that would actually change the mind of the sheriff. So, yep. Months later, I realized recently that this happens months later. I saw that happen after Nick left the hospital, but this next thing happens months later. Nick visits Kelly Gordon in prison, and he tells her that he is the CSI that her father buried alive. And he tells Kelly that what her father did to him, he did that because he loved her. And he hands up the phone, and Nick is so heartbroken, he starts crying. He's like, pick up the phone, just pick up the phone. And I'm like, I just want to hug him, you know? So
I think the full team should have gone to therapy after this.
Yeah. She picks up the phone, and he tells her that whatever hatred, whatever she's feeling, to not take it with her when she leaves.
And that doesn't...
Yeah. But the thing is, we all know that she is going to take it with her when she leaves.
Yep.
Well, do you really think the team would have gone to therapy?
No.
No. I think Catherine would work too with Nick.
Greg, I don't think Walt would have gone to therapy.
I think Greg would have been up to.
But Greg, not yet. I think his first time with therapy happened after Fanny smacking. And we know Sarah is forced to go to therapy, so.
I don't think Kristen would have gone to therapy either. I think maybe they did hang out, though. I mean, as a teen, I feel like after all of that happened, I think after all of this happened, Nick probably went and spent some time with his family, and then he came back. He came back to Vegas to work. And then I think the team got together.
Yep.
They just got together. I don't think it was at Grissom's house either. I don't think Nick would have wanted to go into Grissom's house at that point because he was freaking out.
Catherine's house probably would be the best bet.
Yeah.
Or the diner.
Or the diner. Not the diner, though. I think they would probably go to Catherine's house. You know, they would just talk. If Nick would be feeling up to it, he would talk to them.
And Lindsay probably gave him a big hug.
Oh, that would be really cute.
Even though she's a teenager at this point, but...
Yeah, she'd probably be angry at her mom, but I think, like, Catherine would probably tell... Not all of it, but probably tell...
Just say Nick was kidnapped, and the reason why you didn't see me for, like, 5 days, or 4 days, was because I was making sure he was okay after we saved him from being eaten alive by fire ants.
Or maybe she would not go into... Oh, maybe she would. I mean, she did show Lindsay a dead body. Maybe. And,
Lindsay probably believed this all, folks. Probably was watching the news. Even though she was a teenager. Probably her grandma first told her, saying, he's wondering why your mom was not here? Let's watch this together. This is just something's going on with wonderful friends.
It probably made the news, though, because his dad was a judge, so it probably made the news. I mean,
she's a CSI, so main news in Vegas, and then since his dad was a judge in Texas, it probably made the local news in Texas,
yeah. It's really heartbreaking.
CSI in Vegas, son of local judge local judge Stokes, was kidnapped today at a make-believe scene in Las Vegas, Nevada.
It was really hard to watch this episode. I mean, although I did see this episode when I was doing my first watch, it was hard to watch it. It's really hard to do it. Interesting because Nick is one of my favorite characters. It's kind of like the same thing that I went through with Sarah.
My God, was that one. Like, well, even though I knew Sarah was alive for the first episode, she came back for Walt's funeral. That episode just, oh my God.
Yeah. It almost felt like when they were rescuing Sarah. I mean, Sarah was the one that found Nick, and then Nick was the one that found Sarah. Really, it's a beautiful sentiment, but at the same time, it's kind of heartbroken. The fact that they found each other on those steps of the situation, because they were both kidnapped.
And also had some very traumatic childhood experiences.
Yeah. I think they really kind of, if Sarah would have been able to open up, she would have been able to open up to him about what happened. I don't think she did, though, but it would have been nice. I don't even think that she opened up to Grissom about what happened with Natalie Davis, though. She might have told Brad something, though, because she had to give a statement, right?
Yeah.
She would have had to give a statement, so I think that... when Bress went to collect her statement, she even told him stuff that Grissom wouldn't know. Grissom would not be able to know. Not with Nick, I guess, I think. With Nick, when he would have had to give a statement, but I think he would have given a statement to Grissom.
Yeah.
And he would... I mean, because once he got to the hospital and he was given, like, first aid, he would have had to be processed. So Warwick would have to process him. And then he would have to give a statement. And then Grissom showed up to collect his statement because he was a captain, right? He was also a captain. So he would have received Nick's statement. Well, so next week, what are we talking about next week?
Next week, we are talking about Slaves Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. The introduction of the famous later Heather Kassler. Oh, that episode is a lot.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for listening, guys. We love you so much.
Love you, too. Love you, guys.
Keep up with our socials, if you're not. It's on the description of this episode, by the way. So, we always post our news there. So, love you guys. Bye. Love Stay y'all. Safe. Bye.
Keep safe.